This is Halftime with the Playmakers, your midweek partner with the live show The Playmakers, aired on WANM 90.5 on Saturday from 12:30 to 2 p.m. It's your boy Jay Scott telling you what's hot, what's not from the 813 Tampa, Florida. In today's show, we have some great topics, including FAMU sports, the college football playoffs, some NFL, and some NBA. But I'm not alone in the studio. Today, I got some great guys. Introduce yourself, fellas.
Yo, I'm Wes from the 904, you know, Duval in the building.
Yo, it's your boy EJ, a.k.a. EJR3, every junior member. Let's make some more.
90.5, what's up, man? It's Jay Loy. Y'all know the deal, bringing the sauce all the way from Stone Mountain, Georgia. It's 2025, let's get it, man.
615's in the building. Yeah, you know me. They hate it when I'm here. It's Austin Kaysen.
Man, we got two live show playmakers. How y'all boys feeling?
No, we're feeling great. You know what I'm saying?
I was going to say, I love being here.
Austin ain't been around in a minute, though.
Podcast is less pressure.
I'll be here more often now. I'll be here more often. Don't worry about it.
All right, first semester back, fellas. How we feeling, like, in terms of classes? Like, we feeling like it's going to be a good semester? Or
it's going to be one of them semesters. When I say one of them semesters, it's going to be kind of busy, kind of hectic, but it's going to be a fun time. I'm going to make a lot of memories, and I look forward to just this next semester with y'all boys, bro.
Yeah, man.
Justin, we out the jam after this, man.
I was going to say, our guys out the jam. Bro, it's crazy, bro. We already had, you know, shout out G, shout out Jeff, and, you know, they sitting from the sidelines right now. It's our time, boys. Anyways, moving on, we're going to start off the show with some FAMU basketball. Currently, the men's team has yet to win a game in the SWAC. They lost just recently to Grambling, 79-72. Fellas, what's going on with our Rattlers?
There just doesn't seem to be enough consistency from the team overall. I would say one of our most consistent players this season has been Sterling Young. Even in our losses, he still manages to give us some good production. But overall, a lot of the games that we're losing right now, especially in the SWAC, it's mostly because we have one player who ends up having a pretty solid game.
Yeah.
But everybody else just doesn't seem to show up, especially in the starting lineup. You can't have one player who's doing a majority of the work and nobody else on the offensive standpoint can come through and produce as well. That's always going to lead to inconsistent results, or in this case, we're consistently losing. Because we consistently have inconsistent players.
I will say, though, that they've kind of spread the wealth amount in points for this game. You still have some players popping off, like Milton had a good game, Sterling had a good game. I would say the blame really goes to the bench in this situation because it was a close game throughout. But towards the end of the stretch, it really came down to fatigue because when you had your, you know, you starting five out there, they were putting up production. But when you took the bench and you put in some of the guys who have been kind of coasting throughout the season, we really see those runs that Grambling had towards the end really close it out. EJ, what's your thoughts?
I don't know, man. What Justin said specifically is true as well. But the team in general, just looking at some of the ratings too, just offensive rating, I think of like 10th in the SWAC. Record, obviously, no wins yet in the SWAC. Very concerning, you would think, at this point. You know, last time we talked about this last semester, we were saying they have yet to go into SWAC play.
Yeah.
That was what was going to define them. Well, now we're here and they're 0-3. It is very concerning. I think the team needs to just start playing more like a team. Not just one player going around, not just one player putting up the points. I need everybody to start putting up points consistently. That's what I need to see.
I agree totally. Like, I feel like it is always like a one-person driven offense. And a lot of it, I think, is just inconsistent shooting with the, like, the three ball has not been dropping and, you know, has basketball has advanced, you know, you really need to.
And that was the emphasis going into this season. He said he wanted to shoot more threes.
And we have not. Like, last few games, I think we're shooting below 30, like, well below 30. And, you know, just being able to have someone who can knock down shots consistently really keeps the team in a game. If Sterling is really producing, you know, you can't get any type of help, you know.
One thing I will add to that, we have to be able to guard the three-point line as well.
Like, I'm
looking at it right now.
Yeah.
We are last in the SWAC in opponent three-point field goal percentage. That is ridiculous. You have to be able to run guys off the line at some point, too, as well as make your shots on the offensive end.
I thought they did pretty well. I mean, they shot 44 from beyond the stripe, 84% from free throw, which obviously has been kind of big. If you look at their wins, the games that they have won is because they were able to get, you know, some points where they could, and that includes the free throw line. Austin, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, I just think we're missing something coming off the bench that'll really provide our team an added layer of depth. We only scored 13 points off the bench of our total 72 last game against Grambling. And that should not, it's not a real recipe for good basketball. We're going to get, as we get later in the season, we need guys like Shaquille O'Neal who look like he had some sort of greatness in him. At some point, when we're playing D3 schools and all of a sudden he's going 1-for-4 with 5 points in 18 minutes, whereas I just saw him a couple weeks ago, it looked like he didn't know what passing was. So,
correct me if I'm wrong, but he recently moved to the starting lineup now, right?
Yeah, he did.
He came off the bench last game.
Yeah.
I think that is something that
I thought they started him against Southern.
against Southern, but against Grambling, he came
out. Yeah, last game in Grambling, he was
good. Yeah, I think that's something
that. Spark plug off the bench type of guy. Like,
it's just been inconsistent. That's what it is. It's just been inconsistent.
That is something that I remember Coach Crary talking about, and I don't remember if that was late November or early December, but he was talking about how he still was moving lineups around and trying to find the perfect rotation. But I feel like second week of January, or as we are into the second week of January, actually at the end of the second week of January, we kind of want to see some rotations getting set.
Yeah.
Your players should know what their role is by this point in the season. They should know how many shots per game they're going to put up. You should know right now who's our go-to guy, who's our bucket getter. If the game comes down to it, which guy has the ball in his hands. And that's just not something that we have right now. And it's almost February, and after February comes March, and we know what March brings. If you don't have it together in March, our season will end how it has, unfortunately, many times in the past.
Speaking of better endings, the women's team is currently 1-1 in the SWAC, although they did just drop a game to Grambling on Monday night, losing 78-64. Sydney Hendricks had 18 points, 8 rebounds, and 2 steals. Maya Griffin added 17 points and 2 steals. What's going on with the women's team? Because, I mean, they're not, you know, as inconsistent as they were last season, but kind of hoping that they would be kind of up in the middle to upper range when it comes to SWAC play.
Yeah, for me, when I look at the women's team, it's kind of similar to the, I don't mean to sound like a broken record, they just don't have that one bucket getter that I could really just say, like, let the rest of the team come out flat and she can just impact the game and make stuff happen. I was kind of hoping that it would be Sydney Hendricks for us this year, but she has struggled to say the least in the biggest moments of the year. I can remember as back to as the first game of the season against Howard, she missed huge plays down the stretch at the free throw line in the mid-range. I feel like we just need that one player to come out and just really dominate.
She's kind of like starting to find her footing, but I agree though that if she's going to be the main production on offense, then she needs to take a bigger role, either that's making points or, you know, spreading the ball around.
Absolutely.
I think Signe and, excuse me on her first name, but McEvans for our team right now, I think they're both top 10 in scoring in the SWAC right now.
Yeah, so I mean, for women, they're producing. So I feel like they're finding their way, but it's just there needs to be an identity, especially on offense.
Yeah, it's difficult. I watched an interview recently with Signe Hendricks and kind of her talking about shooting the ball more as far as her jump shot, how coach kind of wanted her to take more jump shots. So maybe that's something that we see more often throughout the season along the line. But for the women's, I think it's more so building consistency. We use that word a lot so far to start the episodes. But just building those good habits up more so often as far as like rebounding, not taking pointless fouls in the game as well. All those things that you look at right now that I feel like the team is kind of struggling with, the women's team is kind of struggling with. All those things right now, as the season moves forward, they have to continue to get better at that. So I'm actually not too pessimistic about the women's team to start the season so far.
I think how they ended the season last year, we'll be able to kind of push them to have an expectation of what could be the ceiling for this season. So there's still room to improve, but I'm not too pessimistic on them.
Same. I'm not too bad on them, or like I'm saying, like it's going to be bad on them. I just feel like we keep using the word consistent, because I mean, just look at the game cast. 10 points in the first quarter, then 23 in the second, 24 in the third, then 7 in the fourth. There's got to be some form of consistency.
Yeah,
the
7th quarter really fell flat.
Something else that I think that we could look forward to, or just at least monitor going forward this season, is Olivia Delancey's play. I'm not sure if she missed time due to injury, but she's only appeared in 5 games so far this year, but even still, her stats have fallen off significantly. She was playing about 24, 25 minutes a game last year. She's only playing 15 to 16 this year. Her points have dropped from 12 points a game to only 5.5, and her rebounding numbers are down, her steals numbers are down, and her turnover numbers are up. So that's just something to monitor going forward. If she can turn it around, I feel like that'd be another key spark plug to the Lady Rattlers season.
And I just want to pick it up what Jay said. Like, we really need that second person. I think McEvans can really be that person. I would like to see her stay consistent, because I've seen her have a few good games in a row. And if she can just be that second person, I think that the team can really have a couple different options. I feel like that's what happens late in games. You know, you kind of figure out what's going on. You see who's the main scorer. Because these girls are playing 40 minutes and the main person shooting the ball. So, you know, like, I feel if you get that second, either just rotation, like you do it through the team, or McEvans really steps up and becomes another second option, I believe that'll like transfer to winning.
I mean, honestly, she might need to be the first option.
She has a couple games leading the team in scoring. I did see that.
Shoot him 40% from three so far this season.
Good bargain. That's what I'm saying. Like, you got to continue that. You got to become that option, because it looks like, you know, our girl Sydney is going to run the show until she really starts becoming that second option.
We'll see what Coach Gordon does moving forward. They have a game on Thursday against Mississippi Valley State. The boys will take on Arkansas Pine Bluff on Saturday. Moving on to what is probably going to be the bulk of our show, impressing news, the college football playoffs is finally currently at its peak, man. It's absolute end to the season.
Man.
We have the national championship game. The stage is set.
Just like we predicted.
Yeah, no, that's a lie. Because I don't know if y'all was looking at our brackets, but yeah, it ain't last very long. Ohio State will take on Notre Dame for the national championship. Fellas, what are our picks? We'll go quickly around and then we'll explain why. Justin, start with you.
I'm picking Ohio State in this game.
All right.
I'm going to take Ohio State.
Okay. Got to be Ohio State.
All right. I'm with y'all.
Man, it's a clean sweep because I'm taking Ohio State too. But let's think hypothetically for a session here, because we kind of didn't see how far Notre Dame would be in these playoffs. I think a few of us had them losing in the first round. So to play the devil's advocate for a minute, what would Notre Dame have to do to beat Ohio State and win the national championship?
You have to put together an extremely strong defensive performance. And what I would honestly say is they have to play them and really study that Michigan versus Ohio State game. Michigan really gave them the recipe for success. When you look at how those teams are kind of structured, running the ball, physical in between the tackles. Like when you look at how those teams are kind of structured as far as Michigan and Notre Dame, I feel like that you really have to study Michigan's game plan for that team.
I'm going to tell you what it was. Run the ball. Any team that has beat Ohio State has run the ball. The only thing is that it seems like Ohio State has kind of reinvented themselves in the postseason, where they're not letting any, like, they know that's what got them beat in the regular season. They know that's what got them beat against Michigan. Moving forward, teams haven't been able to get an inch on
Let me tell you what the missing element is between that Michigan game and this national championship game. The cold. They're going to be playing this game in a dome.
I mean, not to cut you off, but neither team should really be affected by
there's not going to be an advantage for like Michigan in that situation.
Yeah, that's true.
No, that's
like
what
how
I'm
Michigan
saying.
Had that advantage, it's going to be nobody having an advantage this time. It's going to be a clean slate.
Have an advantage. They were in the horseshoes.
Yeah, well, but I'm saying I don't think Ohio State was really able to throw the ball against Michigan how they wanted to due to the weather.
Yeah,
I feel like because their offense was very stagnant. And honestly, I don't really think that should be an excuse, because realistically, you have Trevion Henderson and spin move dude, Judkins.
You got
those two in the backfield. It's like, yeah, you can't run the ball on Michigan. Like, their defense didn't look that great against anybody else, but it was. Like, they weren't able to really air the ball out like they wanted to. I don't have the exact stats on me right now, but I'm knowing the passing yards and the receiving yards were down that game.
One thing that I think Notre Dame has to try and repeat is Texas guarding of Jeremiah Smith. They allowed one catch for like 4 yards. And it's because they had three people on them at all times.
Okay, well, I saw that post though, but it's on. They're playing zone. All
right,
they had a single high safety.
Right,
cover three.
You have
a linebacker sitting in the flash there.
No. I understand what you're saying, and I've seen a post like that. But I'm saying like they had him bracketed to a side.
Oh, for sure.
Like they had a side called Jeremiah Smith, and they had a side called the rest of the defense.
Yeah.
And the way Ohio State took apart Oregon with just Jeremiah Smith, basically, you have to study what Texas did to stop Jeremiah Smith, because it was a way closer game. Because they couldn't get him the ball.
Yeah.
That game shouldn't have been close if they could get him the ball more than once. So I think they have to study what they did, and they have to run the ball and keep the ball kind of out of Ohio State's hands. Like, you have to just dominate time of possession.
Yeah, playing devil's advocate, Notre Dame, they need to run the ball more. Last game against Penn State seemed like they tried to throw, do not put the ball in Riley Leonard's hands. Like, I'm not trying to be rude. I'm just saying, like, you will lose this game throwing the ball more than 25 times with Riley Leonard.
I mean, he was in the upper 25 of college football quarterbacks in terms of completion.
It doesn't matter. I don't care.
I think
the next game, just run the ball.
They have a great running back in Jeremiah Love, though.
I saw
somebody say he's better than Scadaboo and Chinty.
That's crazy.
I don't know about that.
Yeah,
I say he's probably one of the more, like, the fastest and explosive running backs in college football.
He's been great on
because
both.
A player like Scadaboo and Jenty are built, like, heavy off momentum. Like, if they get going, they're hard to stop. But Jeremiah Love can turn chicken noodle soup out of chicken crap. So,
all right.
I like that comparison.
But what I will say about the whole Riley Leonard thing is, yeah, he's not the greatest quarterback, and he certainly isn't the best quarterback in this game, in my opinion. But this is a national championship game. You're going to have to trust him to make some very crucial throws.
Absolutely.
So I think I would actually like to see them try and get him going earlier on in the game and do that along with establishing your rushing game as well. Like, obviously, you don't want to go away from that.
Yeah.
But I also just want to say, we talking about the Michigan game and sort of Ohio State's game plan going into that game and how it backfired on them. I think that's a rivalry game for Ohio State. The last three or four years getting kind of pushed around in the inside. I truly believe they were trying to prove a point in that game. And what we've seen in the playoffs is Ohio State said, yeah, no, forget that. We're going to play our way. We're a perimeter-oriented team. We have the most explosive playmakers all across the field. We're going to get our guys the ball. And that, to me, is why I think Ohio State should be the clear favorite in this game. And why I believe they're not only going to win, they're going to dominate. They've fully come into who they are as a team. And unfortunately, it took them two losses to get there and another loss against Michigan. But I truly don't believe Ryan Day is going to make the same mistake again and go away from what his team does best.
But I will say, though, like Notre Dame, I've been on record saying that Notre Dame has probably one of the best defenses in college football, if not the best at this point, now that they're in the national championship.
For sure.
But part of what makes a really good defense is a well-rested defense. And the time of possession, I forget, was it the West? Did you bring that up?
Or, yeah.
Yeah. Time of possession is going to be a huge point in this game, because if Ohio State can control time of possession and not have rely on explosive plays from Jeremiah Smith, they can build long drives. It keeps Notre Dame's defense on the field and keeps Notre Dame's offense off, because what Notre Dame is either going to have to do is make it a close game by controlling time of possession and making it a three scores, a 24 type of 21 type of game, or they're going to have to match score for score on Ohio State, and I don't think they have the offensive production to do that.
Not at all.
I don't think so either, but I think that they could do something similar to what they did in the Penn State game, where they really are physical rushing the ball. Use Riley Leonard in the run game, and all of a sudden, Faison's running down the sideline wide open. Like, I feel like you can scheme up a way to get them really focused in the run, stack the box, get it one-on-one. Faison shook a guy in that game crazy. It was so wide open just because of how the release was wild. So, like, I think that's one guy that can really make a difference. I feel like he doesn't show up on a lot of scouting reports. I don't think people are really worried about Faison, but then all of a sudden he makes a big play that can really change the game and switch the momentum. Yeah. So I feel like rushing the ball will be important for Notre Dame so they can make that big play later to a guy like that, or to a guy like Jeremiah Love, who's not only good in the run game, but in the pass game, you know, who can get loose and, you know, get open on a wheel route or something. We saw that work for Texas in their game against Ohio State. I feel like the scheme will be very important because their rushing ability will open up their deep throwing passing ability. And I think Riley Leonard can make those throws. I don't want to make him like a throw the ball 30 times a game type of guy.
Yeah, no.
And really control the offense from the pocket. But I think he can make a deep throw open, you know, really scheme something open for him. I think he can hit those for sure.
Speaking on that, I think the game to watch, you know, within the national championship game is going to be how each team's receivers match up against the other team's secondary. Because I think Notre Dame has one of the most underrated secondaries in the nation. You saw that. Well, Caleb Gray made an amazing interception against Penn State that really kind of solidified the game.
Yeah.
But you look at the secondary that Ohio State has and just the names that are thrown around there. Do you think that that will be the X factor going into the game, or what will be the X factor?
I think for me, the X factor is going to be Ohio State's defensive line.
Okay.
The way that they were able to generate pressure against Texas, that does concern me a little bit for Notre Dame.
Well, so. I agree with you, but I also disagree because I think Quinn Ewers is a cone. So I don't...
It's no way. You're going to say that Quinn Ewers' quarterback play is going to be worse than Riley Leonard's is going to be.
I think you should not put it in a situation that Quinn Ewers was in. I don't think you should put Riley Leonard in the same situations.
All right, fellas, moving forward, we have big news out of Georgia as Carson Beck withdrew from the draft and transferred to the University of Miami going to next season.
That's about love, baby.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, listen, as a Miami fan, I'm not really thrilled about this, but
I wouldn't be either. I'm an FSU fan. I'm thrilled about it. You know what I'm saying?
I'm not mad at it, though. Who are we gonna go like?
Hold on. Who do y'all have? So like,
Castellanos, right. Man, the 5'9" king. What do
actually,
you mean?
Castellanos is nice. Castellanos is nice. That was a good pickup.
Was that? I mean, although I'm not a big thrill, it's kind of neutrally.
Boston College legend, man.
It's kind of mutually beneficial in a sense because I feel like Miami is doing a lot more for Carson Beck than Carson Beck will do for Miami.
Absolutely. Yeah. That man just got $4 million.
Yeah, he did. Why do you disagree, Justin?
I disagree because I think Carson Beck, yes, he had a bad season, but what I can really kind of compare this to is Justin Herbert. The talk about Justin Herbert that people love to forget about is that he was supposed to come out of the draft a year earlier.
Yeah.
He didn't end up having the best season that year, so he ended up staying for an extra college football season. Last year wasn't the best season for Carson Beck, I'll say that. Him getting injured at the end of the season and not really being able to put together any sort of final chances to be a first-round pick in the draft, that was something that didn't go his way as well. But for Miami, I think you get a competent quarterback. An experienced guy in the room as well. Somebody who's played championship level football, been in big game situations. And you get to add that guy to your core next season. So that's an extreme positive for them. And I don't want this to feel like it's one-sided.
I feel like this season from Carson Beck showed you that he was throwing to Ladd McConkey and Brock Bowers last year.
Absolutely.
I think it showed us that, like, he's not a good – well, not that he's not a good quarterback, but that he relies on his weapons way more than – like
which is why I think Miami might be a good fit for him, because there's no shortage of skilled talent at Miami, especially with how much NIL money they're pushing around right now.
Right, but like, I agree. But also, like, Georgia also had a lot of talent, but since they weren't round one guys, he still didn't really produce with them.
I mean, it's kind of hard to produce when guys are dropping the ball. Like, easy passes. You know, there's some things sound that like Carson Beck didn't do well at all. But what I can say about him is there's some throws that he did make, but there's some catches that his receivers didn't make.
He has some bright spots.
Yeah, there's some definitely bright spots across this season for him.
I'm not as mad about the Miami move. I'm just interested to see how it plays out.
I'm interested to see how Shane Dawson uses him in the system, though, because he's not a quarterback like Cam Ward.
No, it's very different. But
so it's going to be like,
it's going to be interesting.
Do you think they'll really change like the style of offense they've been playing?
I think so. They'll probably change.
But how much?
Absolutely. A lot.
It has to change a lot.
First of all, like, I feel like we talked about this on the live show on Saturday. Who is he going to be throwing to next year? Like, Restrepo's gone.
Yeah.
Jacoby George is gone. Isaiah Horton's gone. I think their tight end left as well. That's your top four receivers out of there.
Yeah,
the
40-year-old tight end.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Of course, the tight end's out of there. Yeah. top four receivers all gone. Your quarterback is not anywhere near as accurate or as dynamic of a passer. The offense has to change completely.
I think it will be more of a, like, a easy, like, read option, kind of very obvious.
You're going to run a lot of RPOs.
It's going to be a quick. It's going to be a quicker offense, more runs and established, too.
Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think it's going to be
but,
a...
But my thing about the ACC style of play.
It does.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it'll work out.
They can win the ACC. Like, let's not act like the ACC is very tough right now.
No, but, I mean, they always drop a game to Syracuse or something.
Sure.
So,
My message to Carson Beck would be this.
Nobody believes in you.
No, I mean, almost like that. No. I don't believe in him. But look, Carson Beck, if you're listening to this, first of all, turn off halftime with the playmakers and go get in the gym.
Jeez. Prove me wrong.
Like,
he's not listening to this.
I know. But nah, he got to go get in the gym for real. Because if they're not in the playoffs, nah. If they don't win the ACC championship, I don't ever think he deserves to put on an NFL helmet.
I mean, he can. He can just hold
the season,
kicks, you know?
His draft stock going into the season was big.
I ain't know why.
Miami didn't make the playoffs this year.
There's a lot
of
guys
about to have the number one overall pick. So,
the majority of his draft stock went down because of the injury, too. I mean, he was definitely going to fall out of the first round.
Carson Beck's play this year was terrible. Like, it was so, it was very underwhelming.
But I still think it was very underwhelming, at least within the first.
I don't think anyone drafting him to start is what I'm going to say. I think they're going to, like, if I were to draft him, he's either going to be, like, someone who's going to sit behind my old quarterback.
Of course, that was going to be a ceiling.
And, like, so I don't even know if he's a two or three pick. I don't, like, quarterbacks like that go in the six, like Stetson Bennett. Like, I don't
know. You gotta think about how heavy quarterback was, like, drafted last year, though.
Right. I don't think there are too many quarterback needs that need a mild quarterback. I don't think, I think all quarterback situations need, like, an instant playmaker, or we don't really need you.
Okay.
So, like, I don't think I would waste a second or a third. I'd get, like, someone to bolster my team. I get a, because that's where linebackers go. That's where the safeties go.
I think that's going to be a heavily drafted position, especially on the defensive line and linebackers.
Right. Like, I think I'm not using a second round pick on Carson Beck. I'm trying to fill out my linebacker room. I'm trying to get a rotational defensive end in here. I'm trying to get guys who go see the field.
So that begs the question, do you think that going to Miami hurt or improved the draft stock?
I think he has a chance to improve his draft stock for sure. Because, like, if you have a great season, if you throw for 4,000 yards and a bunch of touchdowns, you can go in the top 10. But if he also doesn't, like, it could also do nothing for it. He can also just get drafted.
It can make it worse. He can
I'm like, I don't think he's coming off of the injury.
I think guys like Carson Beck thrive off of name recognition. Because he played in... He played in big games his whole career, basically. Like, every time he started, he's played in big games. Carson Beck's the type of guy that he made a few plays on national television 2 years ago, and that'll get him in the sixth round. You know what I'm saying? That's how Max Duggan got drafted. Like, brother didn't do much. He just got blown out in a semifinals game or in the national championship it was. And, like, he still got drafted. He's somewhere on someone's practice squad. Like, that's how those type of quarterbacks get drafted, in my opinion.
I think if he has a bounce back season, good for him. But I can't really say I agree with the move to transfer from Georgia to Miami. I think Georgia added enough offensive talent in the portal this year for me to believe that the best situation for Carson Beck was if he was to come back, was to come back and play for the University
of
Georgia.
Well, that's what I think. I think they told him yeah, to kick rocks.
I was going to say, I don't think that was an option.
They had come behind him.
And I don't really think that that was that smart either.
Tell him to leave.
No, I think that was very smart. You want someone, because they're going to always be playing for national championships because their roster is so talented. You want a guy that can make plays.
And with how Stetson Bennett played towards the end of the season, I mean, I feel like he was going to have to go through another quarterback type of battle. And
with a Gunner? I mean,
they would have given a fair shot.
I think looked fine.
That's what I'm saying. His spot would have been solidified, and I would have rather take.
I don't think a younger
Gunner Stockton who's been improving and I can develop a little bit more
and can run better.
Listen,
already.
Yeah. Let me put
natural
y'all,
talent.
Let me tell y'all something. As an Alabama fan,
oh Lord,
I remember a situation where one of my starting quarterbacks got benched in the national championship.
Yes, sir.
We recall.
And the freshman who replaced him not only won that game but dominated the next season after that. Uh-huh. And you know what happened? In an SEC championship game that Alabama desperately wanted to win, that starting quarterback who won us the national championship the year before got hurt.
Came back. We
had one option, but to put in the guy who was a veteran, and we won that game. I feel like quarterback debt is never a bad thing. It's never a bad idea to have two good quarterbacks competing. So,
let me just tell you something, though. Gunner Stockton ain't Tua.
You're right.
And Carson Beck. Carson Beck for sure is not Jalen Hurts. So
agreed. And, like, I don't know if my Carson Beck ego can handle being benched by Gunner Stockton. I don't know what's up with them.
He played fine, to be fair, though.
He did. No, like, there's nothing wrong with how he played. I'm just saying I was projected to go in the first round after this season, and I'm sitting behind Gunner Stockton.
I'm not
crazy about that, you know?
I understand your point, though, Justin.
If you're Carson Beck and you can't handle being a backup, sure, brother. Go do your thing. Get your money. You know, it's all
Four
what this sport's about
yeah.
now.
But if you're Georgia,
and you're already struggling to find good quarterback play, and one of your veterans is looking to come back and play, you tell him to kick rocks, allegedly. I don't know how I can confirm this. You tell him to kick rocks. I don't think that is a very good decision for them.
I mean,
it's something that could come back to
bite them. Cheaper too, because now we're paying people. So yeah, Gunner Stockton comes cheaper. You don't have to give Gunner Stockton $4 million.
You don't know if Carson was demanding more money
in a car.
Gunner Stockton probably getting a lot more than $500K in the car.
You're probably right.
Because they said I saw a report a couple weeks ago that said Jackson Arnold got somewhere in the ballpark of $2.5 to $3 million to go to Auburn.
I mean, but he showed
this new era is so funny, bro.
Yeah, no, it is kind of crazy because I think Carson Beck, I think posted like a picture of him in a Lamborghini in Miami, like
he got
holding
four.
Up, holding up the U with his girlfriend, like
and he got
he's
four.
Living a life, bro. He's bump the draft. He enjoyed South Beach for like a whole semester.
Bro, it has generational wealth. Right. It was mid, you know what I'm saying? Like, what are we doing? Like, I'd go to Miami. I'd hang out in Miami for a year with a Cavender twin.
All right, moving on, fellas. We're staying with football, but Mike Vrabel was recently hired by the New England Patriots after the dismissal of Gerard Mayo in his 1 year with the New England Patriots.
That's a good hire.
Obviously, it's a good hire, but you think it was premature
to fire Gerard Mayo?
I feel like that was kind of always a plan. Though.
Yes,
oh, yeah, but that was except, you said it. You just said it.
Except that it's Mike Vrabel, and they not only know Mike Vrabel, he didn't turn the Titans around, but they were terrible and made them better. He's a culture builder. New England likes culture builders. You know, not
sneaky,
that Gerard Mayo
sneaky
was,
athletic. You know, first guy in, last guy out. Yeah. Guy,
no. Real grinder,
real student of the game, huh?
No, but they like culture builders, and he has experience. He won that chip with him, and like I think he was just like one of the top, you know, guys in this coaching carousel, and they wanted a top guy, and Gerard Mayo isn't, you know, it's not that he was a bad coach, not that he did a bad job, but you know, he'll find work somewhere else. Someone hired Gerard Mayo, he's a good coach.
What do you think went wrong?
Timing.
I think culture too. I just don't think he fit. You basically said it. Like,
yeah,
this
maybe it
felt premature. This felt like it was just like, hey, like we need an identity. This team's identity is not Gerard Mayo. Pretty simple.
You think the final straw could have been the last game where they won?
I actually think so. No, I actually think so. Like the way they won, you had the first pick. Like not even just they probably would have went with the quarterback anyways, but you had draft compensation. Like you know teams are gonna be trading with you. Like just in terms of a team, that was a good place to start. And then you won the game. I know Joe Milton said, like, you know, I did it because of this. Like, I had a chance to play. I know he said what he said, but at the end of the day, you know, definitely hurt the team winning that game. So I think that all played into it.
One thing I can say, though, is I hope that we see some reports just about the relationship between Mayo and May and Drake May. That's one thing that is going to be important to look into. I remember when Miami fired Brian Flores, and it was something that really shocked the NFL community, because you had a team that had so much potential led by Brian Flores, who was doing a pretty good job for what he was given to work with. But you heard a couple of years later what really was the defining moment and what ended up getting fired was his relationship with Tua. So I'm interested to read in, like, what was that relationship between Jerod Mayo and Drake May?
You think maybe he liked Joe Milton over Drake May?
That's what I'm starting to think, because, I mean, do you think it beckons a conversation, like, who starts next season?
Well,
no. I think you trade Joe Milton for some decent draft compensation.
Come on. Joe Milton, you're not getting decent compensation out of Joe Milton. Don't get me wrong.
Look,
as someone who has lived in Tennessee for a long time.
That was exactly who I was going to bring up.
Like, wait, who are you about to bring up?
I was about to bring up the Titans trading for Joe Milton.
Oh, please, Lord, no.
Send him a third for Joe Milton.
Listen,
if we trade a third for Joe Milton, I'm not even going to say what I'll do.
I don't think it's worth it.
I'm not even going to say what I'll do.
I mean, the Eagles traded a third for Kenny Pickett.
No, we're not. I pray to God we're not that dumb.
That was just like.
I mean, Joe Milton has some actual talent. We saw it.
But the thing is, Joe Milton's talent is just so, like, Instagram. Like, if you watch Joe Milton practice, you just probably sit there and think, like, oh my gosh, like, this is the greatest quarterback of all time.
Yeah, but, Zach Wilson-esque, you know?
I mean, but it's crazier. It's crazier.
It is.
I've seen some videos of Joe Milton doing.
Bro, hit a backflip in the game.
Yeah, like, like Joe Milton, ridiculous athlete, ridiculous arm, but that man is just not a good quarterback.
Would you prefer him over Will Levis?
Oh, I prefer anything over Will Levis.
Okay, so
I put you at quarterback next season over Will Levis.
I promise you, but that's a check. If you get Joe Milton, right, you get a talented quarterback.
I don't want to give up my third. I don't want to give up my sixth.
Let's just think about it for a second, and then you don't have to draft a quarterback.
Nope. A third for an unexperienced quarterback, though. No. Like, I know you said the Kenny Pickett Eagles thing, but Kenny Pickett at least had experience playing. Joe Milton has one professional, like,
do it for
regular
a fourth.
Season
like,
game.
I'm just saying, like, you could throw a mid-round, like a mid-pick, like a third or a fourth. You get a talented quarterback, more talented than the Mayo man, and then you get Travis Hunter as your pick. You know, you get talent.
That's my ideal pick at one is Travis Hunter, but I'd rather, you know.
Because think about who you get with that fourth. Who do you get? Who are you looking at for your fourth round pick right now?
Like we talked about earlier, I'd rather us stock up on a linebacker or us get a nice solid corner or.
Right, but I think you guys can
Kirk
live.
Cousins.
I feel like we kind of sleep on the late third round, fourth round picks. Like those can be
like those guys are pretty good.
Lucky Irving came out of the third round for the Bucks, and he's been one of our leading offensive production.
Right. No, I'm not saying those picks aren't useful, but I feel like you get a cheap contract because Joe Milton isn't signed to one of those rookie deals that are $10 million bonus, and then you get an $8 million. Like, it's a cheap contract.
I'm gonna come back to
it. A high ceiling. You get Travis Hunter instead.
I see where you're going.
Instead of Cam Ward, instead of Shedeur Sanders.
I see where you're going.
And it's not that he's trash. He's not trash. We've seen it.
Do you genuinely think that if we were to trade a third rounder for Joe Milton and we made Joe Milton our quarterback for 17 games, that fixes any problem that we have right now?
I think you win four more games.
No, you don't.
Yeah, I do.
I don't think it changes, I don't think it flips
the franchise, but guess what? Y'all not flipping the franchise next year.
You've fallen to the clickbait. I promise you have. That's rat poison right there. Like, go watch a full game of Joe Milton, please.
No, I get it. He's not a very polished quarterback.
So then what are we talking
this
about?
This conversation I'm is saying, not even about the Titans, but like.
I think he was going to get fired. I think Jerod Mayo was going to get fired either way. I'm going to get fired either way. I might as well get a win. Win on my way out. Yeah, like Mike Vrabel to me, I was surprised when he didn't get picked up by anybody last year. Right. I thought the Patriots were going to take him last year because, I mean, the shoe fits.
Culture, identity,
like where he probably wanted to be. I remember there was a big controversy when he was with the Titans and we had a bye week. He went up to New England to speak at one of their games. Like,
yeah,
that guy's a Patriot through and through. To me, he was the Dan Campbell before Dan Campbell. He was always willing to take that crazy risk that, you know, a lot of coaches wouldn't be willing to take, and he would just live with it. I mean, he'd go into his post-game press conferences, and if it didn't go right, he'd just say, look, like, yeah, I trusted Derrick Henry on fourth and five with the game on the line. Like,
to throw a touchdown.
Yeah, to throw a touchdown. And because truth be told, I mean, if it went right, like, he'd be the greatest coach of all time. Like, I like Mike Vrabel. I think he's a great coach. I probably think he's probably going to be a top five coach in the NFL. He definitely has a project ahead of him, though.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he doesn't have Derrick Henry and A.J. Brown to start with this time. No Kevin Byard, no Jeffrey Simmons. Wow, I love those Titans.
Jeffrey Simmons, who's a dog.
Thank you for A.J. Brown.
All right, so in other pressing news, we have the NFL playoffs. After this past wild card weekend, the stage is set, and I want to get your picks when it comes to the divisional round. So we're going to go around the table real quick. We'll start with the division, and then we'll move to the conference, and then eventually the Super Bowl.
For my divisional round, the AFC, I have picked the Ravens and the Chiefs to come out. And in the NFC, I've picked the Lions and the Eagles to come out of that round.
All right.
Are we all just going to say the same thing?
Are y'all against that?
I have one different pick.
Okay.
Oh, let me hear it.
I have the Rams over the Lions.
The Rams play the Eagles.
Wow.
The Rams play the Eagles.
No, they don't. The Commanders play the Eagles.
No, the Rams play the Eagles. I got the Rams beating the Eagles.
Okay, now my picks have changed. Now my picks have changed. Never mind, I have it exactly like everybody else.
Austin over there.
Yeah, Austin, you gotta explain that one.
I got the Rams and the Commanders. No, I'm just kidding. I got the Rams and the Lions. I do have the Rams and the Lions though.
Okay, explain the Rams.
I'm in love with that offense. Like,
are you just seeing like rose tinted glasses from like last night?
No. Kyron Williams has been toting the rock all year.
Mm-hmm.
Matthew Stafford has been slinging the ball around the field since I can remember. Still doing it today. They've got great weapons. Like, Nacua, and I don't think they utilize Cooper Kupp enough right now, but
he's running like a decoy out there. It's crazy.
Yeah, like, it's kind of crazy. But
Kupp's kind of, you know, getting up there, though.
He's still really good.
He's got it.
He's still really good.
I promise you, he's got it.
Like, he's a route running, bro. You can't, like, it takes so long to lose that.
And Jalen Hurts he's hurting me. Like, every time I watch him, I'm like, bro, what are we doing today? Like,
I will say, I watched a little breakdown. Nothing is open. Yeah, I know it's quick to blame Jalen Hurts, but if you sit down and watch like a full-on thing of it, the play calling, the passing is horrendous.
I think one thing that was the issue last year.
It wasn't the Brian Johnson thing. It's a scheme thing.
Sometimes what kills me about Jalen Hurts is the sacks he takes.
Like, he does hold on to the ball too long.
It hurts. Like, I'm like, bro, please, just like, you're way too good of an athlete to not just, you know, get outside the pocket and just launch it out of bounds.
I think that's why teams have been playing him a certain way in the pocket. I feel like they kind of just like hold their rush until he makes a move and kind of shifts the pocket with him. And that's why he takes sacks. Like, because they've learned that he can get out there and he can make a difference that way. So D tackles like disengage and sprint down the line and like try and reform the pocket and make him either beat them from the pocket or take a sack, and he takes the sack sometimes.
Well, as a divisional, I have the Lions, I have the Eagles, I got KC and the Ravens. For conferences, where are we going?
For the conference, I'm picking Lamar Jackson and the Ravens to go to the Super Bowl out of the AFC.
I love this guy.
In the NFC, I will be picking the Lions to come out and make it to a huge Super Bowl, a huge moment for their
that
franchise.
That would be American Super Bowl right there.
I'm rooting for it, and it's going to be a movie if we get that for sure.
It's going to be my Super Bowl.
I would hope, because, I mean, we both picked the Eagles. So.
Yeah.
We'll get to that, though.
Yeah, the Ravens, though, over the Chiefs for me. I think.
You think he gets over the hump this year?
Yeah. I think Lamar and Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry looked dominant, especially that last playoff game. I think the combo between them has only gotten better. I think the Chiefs won't be able to stop it. And I think that's how Chiefs have been getting past these games, being able to stop teams. So,
yeah.
I think the Ravens get past that. And, of course, you know, I have the Eagles.
I have the Ravens as well. The Ravens are my team. And then the NFC is weird because they're not built like AFC teams.
I think the NFC is probably the biggest toss-up this year.
It's not the same. And I think the Lions' injuries and their defense will be a big issue against Saquon.
Yes, that's why I have the Eagles.
I think the Eagles will take it unless they have some terrible play calling.
Okay.
Like, if they have, like, Jalen Hurts throw the ball 30 times, you can't win many games doing that. But I do have the Eagles. But I wouldn't be surprised if I saw the Lions or the Rams make it.
Yes, sir.
But, you know, I'm going to take the Eagles.
So you going with the Rams again also?
I do have the Rams.
You got the Rams going to the
I got the Rams
bowl.
Coming out the NFC. And Then in the AFC, I do also have the Baltimore Ravens.
I'm trying to be respectful, but I've never seen someone love the Rams so much.
No, actually, I rock with the Rams a lot.
Oddly enough, I used to be a Rams fan.
Oh, that's
There it is.
There it comes out. And the Chiefs comes out.
I'm not going to lie. I have the Chiefs coming out of this. I mean, listen, and I hope I'm wrong because I don't like the Chiefs, but good teams find a way to win, and that's what Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs have done.
I like watching that.
I don't think that my pick was that I don't think the Chiefs are going to make it out the AFC. It's just that I really, really, really don't want them.
And see,
to
I feel like we got to stop doing that, though.
That's not how I picked it. That's not how I picked it. I think
I'm not saying like the Chiefs specifically, but like just going forward, like
yeah, people got to stop hating on the Chiefs.
Ball
like,
is just, ball.
They really act like they're cheating and they're not. Like I'm just winning.
When they first played that first week, it was different. Like I feel like
that toe was crazy. It hurt my soul.
Like I said, that combo now, it's just deadlier. It's colder now, so it's going to be harder to tackle Derrick Henry.
For me, I look at the Chiefs and the amount of times they just had to skate by in games this season, and that does concern me a little bit. Great teams do find a way to win games, but Lamar Jackson is a great player. And yeah. I believe he almost found a way to win that game in week one.
No. Oh, and week one, yes, yes, yes. I thought you were talking about the playoff matchup last year.
Because that was coaching malpractice.
What to
coaching
the brim?
Malpractice.
Why is Lamar Jackson throwing the ball 28 times?
Burrow had to throw it to himself to get some yards. I was dying watching that game.
It's going to be a good game, though. Well, sneaky feeling. I feel like Buffalo might surprise everybody.
I think Buffalo has a chance, but I feel like the way that the Ravens manhandled them in the first meeting, I think that'll weigh on them a little bit. I think they'll come out firing, and then I think they'll get hit, and they'll keep hit, and they'll keep getting hit.
I could see Buffalo doing something. Like, I would believe more Buffalo than Austin does in the Rams. Like, I feel like that team would be the one to be like, oh, snap, Buffalo's here. Like,
yeah. I feel like Josh Allen's going to do a boneheaded thing.
Buffalo has playmakers, but this is where a Josh Allen fan, FC, is really going to try and get on this podcast. And if they're listening, I really hope they do comment, because they've been talking about all year how, oh, Josh Allen is just carrying this team. Well, don't be surprised if nobody picks y'all to win this week, because if you have to rely on Josh Allen to win this game, and on the other end, you have just a surplus of weapons with Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry being the main two dominant forces on that team, don't be surprised if nobody picks you.
Hey, bro, they got DeMar Hamlin.
You seen the picky hat?
Power of God, I guess.
I'm gonna leave it alone.
All right, hey, real quick, we're going to do the Super Bowl.
Super Bowl, Lamar Jackson gets his first ring this year.
That would really like cap it off.
That would be great. I'm doing the same. I'm picking the Ravens to win the ball. A little biased, but we'll take it.
E-A-G-L-E-S.
Yeah, I don't know why you started the chant like we all know it.
Come on, let's say it.
No, we're good.
Eagles, yeah.
I also had the Ravens, but y'all got me.
I was going to say the Rams. I was going to say, oh, my God.
Y'all, I mean, wanted to be different, just... Throw the Rams in there. I got the Ravens.
I'm going to have to go with the Eagles here with EJ. I mean, I think they have the pieces. It really is going to come down to how well Jalen Hurts can play as a quarterback, honestly.
Just got
to
say with me, E, A, G.
I'm not saying that.
I think no NFC team can win this year. I'm not going to lie. They have to go play a Superman. They have to go play a Hall of Famer in the Super Bowl.
Not you being a Ravens fan saying that?
No, because Josh Allen makes the Super Bowl, they have to go play a Hall of Famer. Patrick Mahomes makes the Super Bowl, they have to go play a Hall of Famer.
Have the NFC teams not, didn't the Eagles beat the Ravens in the regular
season?
They did. And the Bills and
Lions
had
by the amount of points Justin Tucker missed.
The Bills and Lions had
by the amount of points Justin Tucker.
Well, you had to settle for field goals at the end of the day.
I mean, they did too. I just told you they lost by the amount of points.
I know, I'm just saying. I'm saying
we would have seen something else if they had quite literally made the kicks. Like, there would be a more decisive outcome.
He's a confident
you lost
Ravens
by. Fan. No, I'm not. This is a actual, like, the points. They would have been equal points if we didn't come down to, like, a kicker missing things. It wasn't even in crunch time. It wasn't even for game. He missed just kicks
the whole game. I see what you're saying.
Like, it wasn't like he missed for game. That means you beat us.
Well, outside kickers being the true MVP, quote unquote, we're going to talk about the actual MVP this year. We heard a lot of talk about. Pretty smooth, huh?
No, what are you finna say?
But I have facts, man. There are facts. It's Lamar Jackson.
It is
Lamar Jackson, and I'm not biased, I swear.
Are we all running with that?
I think it's a close race. I think that Josh Allen deserves his flowers for this season. I am going to go with Lamar Jackson.
Wait, quick question. Is Saquon not, like, can we not, like...
I feel like the consensus is between...
In terms of a true MVP.
Saquon is offensive player of the year, and that's how
it's just sucks.
They're going to give him that, because, I mean, it's a quarterback.
Yeah, that's how it works. I just feel like... You know, he should be MVP.
I'm with Lamar Jackson as well. I definitely think that Saquon should probably get some more consideration than he is getting.
He'll probably get like a Scatterboo treatment where, like, they'll look at it, you know, in a post-10 sense, be like, oh, man, well, you know, he was
really that guy this season.
Yeah, well, the year when the Titans got the one seed and Derrick Henry ran for 2,000 yards, he didn't really get any real MVP looks. So, I mean, you can't really give it to Saquon.
To get a running back MVP, they have to do the LaDainian Tomlinson thing and have 28 touchdowns or something ridiculous. Like, you can't
he would have had 28 touchdowns.
Push! Oh, well.
Like literally, we would have.
Thank you, Saquon, for getting us down the field. Get out the game.
You're not
tush
lying.
Push.
The tush push is evil. It eats away from running back stats. It's so evil. And Josh Allen would look terrible next to Lamar if you didn't have the tush push. He has like 11 of them.
So do we not think voter fatigue has to do this at all?
Yeah.
I think it does, but I also think Josh Allen should be low in the running than Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow is having a nasty season, and the Bengals win like one game without him.
I will say, I see where people are coming from with Josh Allen. In terms of the team, like that's always gonna be everyone's argument. Like, look at the team around him. Like beforehand, people did have the Jets and Dolphins ahead of him. Like before the season started, the Jets and Dolphins were projected to be a better team.
But
than the
I think that has more to do with how much the Jets and the Dolphins flopped.
Yeah,
I don't like that he gets 6 free wins a season, and that he gets like, oh, the record is why he's a better. Yeah. Like, oh, like his division is terrible. James Cook
Brady's
has 16 touchdowns.
Oh, James Cook has been outperforming better than
Mr. Revis and those guys.
Yeah,
and,
but Terrell Revis. It's like he's a corner. Like he can't go out there and strictly win
it was a
game.
A decent team. It's not like.
Nah, I know. I was a fan of those Jets.
But what I'm saying is like. People act like there's nobody. He has Amari Cooper, and I know he wasn't there the whole season. He got injured like a game or two, but he still has Amari Cooper. He has Keon Coleman, the GOAT. James Cook has the same amount of rushing touchdowns as Derrick Henry. People act like he's playing with bumps, and he's not. And Khalil Shakir is taking 15-yard curls to the crib.
He has stepped up. Shakir has stepped up. Great.
Like, nobody on the Ravens is doing things like that.
Yeah.
And people are like, hey, bro, his supporting cast is terrible.
It's not that you're wrong. It's just not how it's going to be seen. Like, at the end of the day, it's always
I don't like that there are certain look at both things side by side. They don't. It's weird. Yeah.
So if Josh Allen somehow ended up with the MVP, I would understand, like, why people voted that, because that's how it's seen.
I think Joe Burrow is more valuable to his team than Josh Allen is.
Yeah, I mean, that was a good point that you know, they only won one game without him there.
But, yeah, like,
it still comes down to who had a better team. Because, I mean,
I feel like that's not the right thing.
But it's hard to consider Joe Burrow when they're not even in the postseason.
Yeah,
but they were this close. And the only reason they did it is because, it's because their defense was so bad. Like, Burrow was putting up 40 points a game for like 8 weeks straight.
But here's the thing, though. And this is where I think having a team of great playmakers can kind of work against you. With Joe Burrow, for me, I look at him like, okay, yeah, Joe Burrow had a heck of a season. Jamar Chase was on the outside for him.
Right.
Jamar Chase is a triple crown wide receiver this year. Yes, Joe Burrow was getting him the ball, but I don't imagine it being that hard to get Jamar Chase the ball at times.
There are three quarterbacks that can do that besides him. Like, I feel like there are three guys, and they're the guys in the MVP race. Those are the only three quarterbacks that I'm like, hey, could probably do the
Sam
same
Donald
thing with Jamar.
Got Justin Jefferson the ball.
That's different.
How is it different?
Because one, he has like Jordan Addison beside him. He has Kevin O'Connell, one of the best offensive minds. T. Higgins was injured for like 7 games.
But I still feel like you can't say any quarterback. Like, there are good receivers who can make quarterbacks look better.
I mean, yeah, of course. I'm not gonna say that's not possible, but I'm just saying like the amount that Jamar Chase like had an insane season. He was so like it's not the same as to say like Justin Jefferson had one of his standard. You know, a little bit over 1,000-yard seasons. Like, he had 1,400 yards.
Yeah.
And then
Justin
Jefferson?
Justin had 1,400.
And then, Jamar Chase had, 1,700, 1,800. Yeah. Like, it was an amazing season. Like, it was something that, you need a top-tier quarterback to do. Because anybody, a trash quarterback can get a top-tier receiver 1,000, 1,100. But 1,700, 1,800, that's a lot.
But I just want to clarify, though, that that's a conversation that could be had about Joe Burrow. Whereas, when you look at, or even Lamar Jackson, you could have a conversation like, well, it's kind of easy to rush for the amount of yards that you have, or what defenses are also now looking at Derrick Henry and not just you. It's different.
There's this
narrative about Josh Allen where that's not really on his team. Yeah. But like you said, that's not really as true as people are saying.
It's not quite the same.
Yeah.
Well, we'll leave it up to the league to decide. All right, fellas, that was good dialogue on the NFL. Moving on to our final topic of today's show, we're going to talk about NBA first team. All-Star Weekend is around the corner. I want to see who your, all-team starting five would be.
My first team all-NBA right now, you have three obvious choices. Giannis, Jokic, Shea. Those are the three obvious. I would put in Tatum right now. I'm leaning Jalen Brunson today. But I could see the case for Donovan Mitchell.
I would lead more towards Mitchell, but I hear what you're saying, though.
It's tough because the team success.
Yeah.
That's what's really. Team success and being the best player on that team. Yes, yes, for sure.
My thing about the Cavs is just that, and don't get me wrong, Donovan Mitchell's having a great season. He's averaging over 22.5 points, 4 rebounds, and 5 assists a game. But they just do it so much by committee that I just don't know that I would put Donovan Mitchell in that.
But most of the plays and every offensive production goes through him, though.
It does. It does. But
because, if you're adding, like players like Jokic isn't putting up crazy numbers, but he's able to facilitate a really high-powered offense. And that's what keeps him in the running every year.
Jokic is
Jokic bugs me so much.
He's kind of putting up crazy numbers.
His numbers are disgusting.
It's 31 shooting 55%.
Oh, jeez. Okay, wait.
This is all-time stuff. Like, this, your favorite center might not have a season that looks like this.
I hate this guy.
For me, I feel like the Donovan Mitchell situation kind of looks like Tony Parker's situation back in the day. The Spurs dominated the Western Conference for such a long time, and Tony Parker only came away with 3 All-NBA second teams and an All-NBA third team. Like, yes, the offense ran through him, and I know he had Tim Duncan too, who was obviously the better player, but just because he's facilitating the great offense that's dominating the league, I don't think that automatically puts him in the All-NBA first team. That is very much an individualistic award.
So who's your 5 then?
I have, like you said, Giannis, Shai, and Jokic have to be there.
I feel like that's, those are the under, those guys have to be there. There's no discussion.
Absolutely. I'm leaning towards Wembanyama. He's averaging 25 and 10 with...
He'll have the big pull for a defensive player of the year, so yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And then my 5th, I'm somewhere in between Anthony Edwards and... Anthony Davis hasn't been playing great as late, but he started off the season amazing.
What about Cat? What do you think about Cat?
I was thinking Cat too, but I think just because...
Just so up and down, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, he's 11th in scoring and 2nd in rebounding.
I mean...
Cat? He has a case. It's just, you look at the other guys.
He's been the clear 3rd best big, or not 3rd, 4th best big in the NBA.
And I think that puts him
off that alone, that's going to make you a 2nd or 3rd team type of guy.
Absolutely. Yeah. Did the All-NBA teams go positionless, or...
That's a good question, actually.
I don't know.
I'm not sure if they went positionless, but I know the 65-game rule does apply, so that's why I...
Luka's gone.
Yeah, I can't really add Luka in there, but Luka would definitely deserve to be on the first team.
They need to shorten the season, but that's a different discussion.
Yeah, so they adopted the positionless. EJ and Wes.
The first 3 that everyone's been saying, I'm going to lean more towards... I'm actually going to lean more towards Brunson over D-Mitch.
Okay.
And then I like what Dawson said about Wemby, but I think I have to go Tatum.
I'm not mad at that.
Yeah.
I am going to go to the top 3, and I am going to go Brunson. I'm thinking, I want to say Wemby just because of he does so much.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking. I mean,
he does so much.
It's really tough. It is. It's really tough.
I'm going to go to the top 3. I'm going to go Wemby and D-Mitch as my last 2.
Okay.
Do the Cavs get 3 All-NBA players this year? Because I really think that Mobley deserves to make All-NBA team.
No. I don't think they get...
Get 3 is a stretch. Because, it's D-Mitch and then Mobley. Then who else would you go?
Garland. Maybe, but I don't think he has the numbers for it, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, 21 points and 7 assists. It's they're good numbers, but I don't think he's gonna end up making All NBA 13.
All right, well, fellas, that brings us to the end of this show. I want to go into probably our favorite part of the show, and that is shout outs. So we'll go around the table.
Shout out to my grandma who passed away recently over the break.
Condolences.
Rest easy, grandma. But I also want to give a shout out to everybody who is in California. If you're listening right now, our prayers are with you. A very tough situation to be in, and I hope that people find a way that they can contribute to people who are in need in California.
Yeah, shout out to my Lord and Savior, and prayers for everyone in California with the wildfires, hoping everything is safe. And then shout out just to the semester in general, it being my last semester, hoping to make a great semester. I'm going to be counting down just like G was.
I was about to say, you have to do the countdown.
Yeah, I did a countdown every time. I don't know it right now, but next time, I promise I have it.
Shout out everybody. Prayers up to the people in California. Thank God, my Lord and Savior, my family, thank you for all my support. And just shout out, these playmakers right here, trying to keep it stay busy this semester.
Yeah.
Doing a lot of stuff with
this
you guys.
Semester, man. We're doing big things.
Yeah.
Yeah, shout out to everybody listening. We appreciate your support always. It means a lot to us as student journalists, having your support and that you take the time to listen to our voices. Shout out to my family, mom, dad, sister, all y'all. Love you. And yeah, that's about it.
All right, I just want to say shout out God, man. Prayers for New Orleans, prayers for LA. You know, obviously there's some tough times going through, but God's got us, man. And I want to say, you know, shout out to Wes for one coming on the show today. It's your first time on the pod, man.
Appreciate
you did a great job.
For having
definitely
man.
To have you on.
He did
often.
A great job.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
I want to thank, you know, my OGs, Jeff, Ahmad. You know, we won't let you guys down. Obviously stepping into a bigger role this semester. Big things coming out the Playmakers, man. So stay tuned. And that'll be it for this episode. We out here. Halftime with the Playmakers is produced in the studios of WANM-FM 90.5 and the School of Journalism and Graphic Communication at Florida A&M University.